Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Death Notices, Odessa. Naomi Jane Carter, 88 of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 24th in Odessa. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Melissa Lamb, 54, died Friday, August 19th in Odessa. Services are pending with Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Director of Odessa. New Provost touts UTPB potential by Ruth Campbell. Starting off her education, Susan Ganter, University of Texas Permian Basin's new Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs, thought she would go into choral conducting. But after adding a math major and continuing her education journey, Ganter decided the university environment was for her. She earned a bachelor's degree in mathematical sciences and music from Southern Methodist University. She received a master's in applied mathematics and a doctorate in educational administration with a focus on mathematics, both from University of California, Santa Barbara. She spent most of her faculty years at Clemson University in mathematics science. But Ganter said she wants to be more involved in the transformational part of universities. So she decided to go to administration. Officially, Ganter started at UTPB July 18th. When her position was announced, her daughter was a senior. She has two children. We worked out an arrangement where I came once a week a month during the spring semester so that I could stay for my daughter's graduate. President Woodley was just amazed about that. His bonus of it was, I told it meant that I had the luxury of having about 6 months to get to know the institution, to talk to people, to meet the community without the pressure of people putting things under your nose to sign, Ganter said. Because her title is long, her two children decided to shorten it by calling her Puffball Ganter, or Puffy. But seriously, her job is huge. The provost's piece is being over all of academic affairs, so all the deans, all the colleges, the library, online education, our research, grant studies, and our Office of Innovation and Commercialization. All of that falls under the provost, Ganter said. But the executive vice president piece was actually a new thing that President Woodley added because she wanted someone who was also going to work with her on a community regulation and fundraiser, an outward-facing pieces of the university because she wants the strong academic part to be out of the community and just hasn't been as much in the past, Ganter said. Ganter said she and UTPB President Sandra Woodley are a team. Ganter said Woodley has made it clear that she selected Ganter because she thought Ganter had the background to bring strength to academic affairs. Ganter said she and Woodley would put their heads together to come up with the big areas that need attention. Really, I think the overreaching thing is academic affairs needs to be needed a strategic vision and aligns with the strategic plan that has been put in place for the university, Ganter said. The strategic plan is about 4 years old and includes things like community outreach and relations and growing its research and strategic partnership with industry. That's a strength that I bring to the table because of my interdisciplinary work in mathematical sciences. I've done a lot on that, connecting with research, with industry, and thinking about not just mathematics as a discipline, but the kind of problem solving can do across the sciences, Ganter said. Why students might use UTPB instead of other regional colleges have not really been grappled with because of academic affairs, she said. Going to be working on this year, Ganter said. Resources are also a big issue. I think there are things we could do better to be more efficient with our resources and use them to really put funding and people into areas where they want to grow, she added. Two big factors drew Ganter to UTPB in the position. One is I'm a native Texas. And I wanted to come home. I'm actually from the Houston area. I grew up right about 5 minutes from NASA Space Center. So I grew up with astronauts' kids, what was super fun. So that's one of the other things on the professional side. UT Permian Basin is part of the University of Texas system. And the system, I think, is a moment in time where they're looking at the campus as the big thing for the system. I think there's a lot of interest in becoming an even greater presence in the Permian Basin, Ganter said. When she was an undergraduate student at SMU, places like UT Arlington and UT Dallas were sleepy commuter campuses that didn't have very many students, and now look at what they are. She added that UTPB could have the next coming thing. I wanted to come somewhere where student success is highly valued. That's been a lot of my work over the years, and where there's a feeling that they're ready for our next big adventure. And I think that's exactly where this institution is, Ganter said. Ganter comes to UTPB from Emory-Riddle Astronautical University, where she had served as Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and Professor of Mathematics since 2017. Prior to ERAU, she was a school director and department chair at Virginia Tech, Clemson University, and East Carolina University. Her research focused on the evaluation of innovation in post-secondary sciences and mathematics curricula and had been supported by grants totaling over $12 million, including a prestigious senior research fellowship and residence at the National Science Foundation. The UTPB website said, "Student access and success at the post-secondary level are natural components of her work, including the implementation and evaluation of programs designed to improve success rates for underrepresented students." Woodley said she is glad to have Ganter on board. "The university is set to benefit from Dr. Ganter's breadth of experience and enthusiasm for helping UTPB achieve our strategic goal. We are excited to have someone with such an impressive and diverse background on our team," Woodley said.
Well-deserved promotion. New ECISD Assistant Chief takes on safety by Ruth Campbell. Newly appointed Ector County ISD Assistant Police Jeff Daniels comes to the job with a wealth of institutional knowledge and out-of-the-box thinking. The former lieutenant's promotion comes at the time when school safety is once more in the spotlight with the tragic shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde. About 8 years ago, Daniels moves into a master sergeant position, which became a lieutenant spot. Just recently, he was promoted to his current job. He added that he really likes working in schools and with kids. "I was on campus 8 years, and it's a very rewarding job. It is true community policy, 100%. When you talk about a community policing police department, a school district is that. You take an officer, and you basically put them in a small city, and they get to know their people. They get to know their kids. They get to know their faculty," Daniel said. "They become friends and mentors to these kids," he added. Daniels has been in law enforcement for 27 years, 24 with ECISD, and 3 with the Odessa Police Department. "As young kids, I always found it interesting," Daniels said, "of what drew him to law enforcement. They, as I grew older, I worked in the security field, so I'd work half a day, go to high school half a day. My work job was being a security officer catching shoplifters," Daniels said. He added that he would meet the officers that came out to their calls and was influenced by them. They suggested he go to the police academy, so he did. Daniels worked for Lowe's Marketplace, Mervyn's Department Store, and then Odessa College Police Department. "Going to OC," Daniels said, "was a great starting point. Plus, he got to experience different calls and work on school campuses, which prepared him for work in ECISD. At the time," he said, "a lot of officers were shifting into school districts. I was kind of a new policy, and I'd worked with a lot of them really closely," Daniels said. He followed the trend and started working weekend alarms for ECISD part-time. The district had an opening, so he applied. "Becoming assistant chief just kind of evolved. We didn't have an assistant chief position, so my goal was to be chief. I wanted to be prepared with a bachelor's degree, so he went to school," Daniels said. He recently reached the objective, completing a bachelor's degree in business leadership from OC. In the process of doing that, the assistant chief position was created. "We just saw a need for another step in our chain, for our approval process for us to be aligned with the way the Department of Justice has everything set up. We want to follow that trend. They implemented the assistant chief job, and I was able to get it," Daniels said. Under the emergency management part of his job, Daniel oversees adults of things like classroom door, drills on the campuses, and the school district level. More video cameras and handheld radios for schools also have been added. They ensure that campuses have up-to-date emergency operation plans that give them an idea of where they should go and what process to follow. "We oversee all emergency drills throughout the district for instructional and non-instructional facilities. We ensure that all drills are completed and proper reporting is done. That's about 10 drills a year per campus per location," Daniels said. Daniels and his wife, Anna, have 3 children and 1 granddaughter. Chief Todd Hunter said Daniels could work anywhere but has chosen to stay at ECISD. "There's hard work, very dependable, very respectful,
both internally and externally. He is educated, he's creative, and he leads by strong example, Henner said. Henner added that Daniels is well-respected in the community. One thing that I really like was he's innovative on coming up with new plans, programs, and processes. Also, tactfully speaking, he's one of our leaders, Henner said. Having been assigned to train with OPD SWAT for 15 years, Daniel was able to bring what he learned back to ECISD, so they have been conducting alerts, or advanced law enforcement rapid response training, before it was called that, for many years. He stepped down from that July 1st, 2022. They just formalized it by calling it alert training. It's a lot more refined probably than it was years ago, but he, Daniels, helped us to bring the tactical piece of the offices and designate the training, Henner said. For example, Henner said he proposed bringing simulations into the department for tactical training and exercises, and they have been holding those for probably 15 years. We kind of shifted years ago to get that we have locations that we would go to and set up the scenarios and set up the trainings, and we've been doing that for years before it was called ALERT, Henner said. They have six trainers who train the other officers in ALERT, along those from law enforcement independent agencies. We've been strong about the training for years, and we put strong emphasis behind that for years, Henner said. Henner said there is a suspicion that the ranks will grow from the current 29 members, including command staff. I think there are some grants that will come in the future, and they're going to certain addresses. Employing more police officers on the campus and just for the protective pieces. It's been a while since we saw that, but I think it's probably coming. I'll come from either the federal or state level, so I suspect we'll grow in the future, without question, Henner said. There are many specific jobs that officers perform. Daniels also is emergency management coordinator, which is very time-consuming, Henner said. We have him and we have our officers. That's what we're doing audits on campuses, Henner said. They added that they not only have to undergo alert, but they are mandated training like restorative justice, for example. Daniels said this is a one-time 40-hour training. There are so many different trainings that come to you. It's not just TCOL related, which is the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement, but there are more now for school district police officers, so there's a lot, Henner said. As mandates have come about, training time has increased for district officers. Officer schedules are centered around teacher schedules, so they had 10-month police officers and 12-month officers. We had to increase their time to 10 and a half months, though that we could add the additional 2 weeks so we could keep them with the training. So also, there's going to come a time when we'll have to be a year-round position just to address the training needs that have come our way. There's a lot more that's been put up on us, Henner said.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, August 29th. Christian Warford square off for TRC seat. Railroad Commission opponents debate priorities. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Espousing markedly different views, incumbent Republican Texas Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian and Democratic nominee Luke Warford are in an all-out sprint for the November 8th general election finish line. Christian contends that the state would be much better off with his traditionalist approach, while Warford is in hot pursuit with what he says was the commission's failure before and during the catastrophic winter storm Uri in February 2021. Quote, on the campaign trail, Texans are concerned about energy security, rising inflation, and the unstable economy, Christian said Wednesday. They understand the important role domestic oil and gas production plays in lowering the cost of energy and in making over 6,000 consumer products that we use every day. They want a conservative railroad commission that cuts red tape and fights back against the Biden administration's overreach, end quote. Seeking his second six-year term, Christian said, quote, my priority as railroad commissioner is to provide a consistent, predictable regulatory environment for Texas businesses, relying on sound science to ensure that our economy continues to grow while ensuring a safe and clean environment. My primary goal is to make certain that Texans have access to cheap, plentiful, and reliable energy, both for today and in the future, end quote. Christian sets policy for the powerful Oil and Natural Gas Regulatory Agency with fellow commissioners Christy Craddock and Jim Wright. Asked how much he spent during the GOP primary against Tom Slocum Jr., Dwayne Tipton, and Sarah Stogner, who took him to a runoff, he said, quote, "We spent over $1 million in the primary, and we will raise and spend what it takes to be victorious in November," end quote. Libertarian Jaime Diaz and Green Party nominee Hunter Crow are also on the November ballot. Warford said Wednesday that the Railroad Commission failed to require adequate preparations for Winter Storm Uri. Quote, "The voters are mad because we couldn't keep the lights and heat on and hundreds of Texans froze to death in the energy capital of the world," said Warford, who was unopposed in his primary. Quote, "They're also telling me that they're paying too much for natural gas and electricity. One of the most important issues is how we make sure our natural gas producers are prepared for cold weather so that the grid does not fail. To address that, we need a clear weatherization standard and a railroad commission that will enforce that standard," end quote. Having raised $500,000 and hoping to spend $1 million to $2 million in the race, Warford said it is pro-business to want to lower emissions. Quote, "Our oil and gas producers want to compete for European business, and European buyers are willing to pay a premium to lower emissions," he said. "I want to say our oil and gas are clean, and we don't have that right now. We need to get the flaring situation under control. The Railroad Commission's failures are hurting the reputation of Texas oil and gas," end quote. Warford said he would also address natural gas pricing. Quote, "Pipelines made billions during the storm, and Texans are now paying for that in higher utility bills," he said. "We need somebody on the commission who will do what the commission was founded to do, prevent monopolies from taking advantage of Texas consumers. I have a real interest in doing the job. We have seen over and over again that Wayne doesn't want to do the job," end quote. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Blood Drive. A blood drive in memory of Buddy Hale will take place from 9 a.m. to noon today at the Bloodmobile at Permian High School Fieldhouse parking lot, 1800 East 42nd Street. To schedule an appointment, call B. Martinez at 432-312-5812 or 877-25-VITAL or visit donors.vitalent.org, blood drive code W1292. Golf deadline. Knights of Columbus Council 8773, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, will have scheduled its 21st annual golf tournament September 10th at Radcliffe Ranch Golf Course. Registration begins at 8 a.m. Deadline for teams is today. For team or for more information, contact Pete Fierro at 432-258-3304 or email pedrojavier-fierro@yahoo.com. Volunteers needed. Medical Center Hospital is in need of volunteers for its volunteer services. Applications may be found online. To apply, or for more information, call 432-640-2249, email jjones1@echd.org, or visit tinyurl.com/YFJJMYHC. Meals on Wheels of Odessa is in need of volunteers. Volunteer opportunities, drivers, kitchen staff, and Mudbug fundraising. To sign up or for more information, call 432-333-6451, email volunteer at mowodessa.com or visit mowodessa.com. The West Texas Food Bank is in need of volunteers. Volunteer activities include assembling pantry boxes, assembling senior boxes, assembling food to kids backpacks, sorting and processing donated items, sorting and processing produce, distributing food in our drive-through pantry, distributing food on a mobile outreach, and helping the garden team in the XTO Energy Innovative Gardens. All volunteers, regardless of age, are required to register through the WTF Volunteer Hub. Children must be 16 years of age or older to volunteer on their own. Children under the age of 16 must be supervised by a parent or guardian. Dress appropriately and comfortably. No spaghetti strap shirts, short shorts, leggings, or clothes that are revealing. Also, closed-toe shoes only. No flip-flops, sandals, or heels are allowed in the warehouse for safety purposes. For more information or registering a group, email volunteer coordinator Cindy Garcia at cgarcia@wtxfoodbank.org. To register, visit tinyurl.com/mukxdvyf.
Odessa American, Monday, August 29th. Ins and Outs of Medicare's Lifetime Reserve Days by Tony King. Dear Tony, can you explain why a hospital employee from the Medical Claims Division asked my husband Greg to sign a form stating that he is aware that he is now in his lifetime reserve days while he is waiting for his lung heart double transplant? He went into the hospital in May for congested heart failure, only to discover that his heart and lungs can no longer support him. The wait on his double transplant is taking longer than expected, and I am concerned that the hospital will send him home or to a nursing home to wait, and he will not receive the correct medical care. Please explain what Greg needs to do. He is covered by a Medicare supplement and has had no issues with that plan. Thanks. Anna from Conroe, Texas. Dear Anna, the hospital staff had Greg sign the form about his lifetime reserve days because once he has passed the inpatient hospitalization 60 lifetime reserve days, then Medicare stops paying and the stay is his responsibility. Anna, there is a notice written in the summary of benefits for a Medicare supplement plan only and not a Medicare Advantage plan regarding once Medicare's lifetime reserve days are used, and it states, notice, when your Medicare Part A hospital benefits are exhausted, the insurer stands in the place of Medicare and will pay whatever amount Medicare would have paid up to an additional 365 days as provided in the policy's core benefits. During this time, the hospital is prohibited from billing you for the balance based on any difference between its billed charges and the amount Medicare would have paid. For 2022, Medicare Part A covers an inpatient hospital stay with a $1,556 deductible for days 1 through 60. Yes, an inpatient hospital deductible of $1,556 can happen 6 times a year. This includes a semi-private room and board, general nursing, and miscellaneous services and supplies. If your Part A inpatient hospital stay is longer than 60 days, then for days 61 through 90, Medicare pays all but $389 per day, and for days 91 and after, Medicare will pay all but $778 per day, with the 60 lifetime reserve days to be used. Once the Medicare lifetime reserve days are used, there are not any more inpatient hospital benefits. You will pay all the cost of the remainder hospital stay. Since Greg has a Medicare supplement, he will have the additional 365 days of inpatient hospital benefits that only a Medicare supplement insurance plan has and will pay. What a blessing that Greg has a Medicare supplement and he and his doctors together can pick how and where to have his heart and lung transplants and which rehab skilled facility he will select while recuperating. Those enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan should discuss lifetime reserve days with that plan's customer service regarding extended inpatient hospital stays. If your Part D plan does not cover your new transplant prescription drugs, then who will pay? You will. Please verify that your new prescriptions will be on your current Medicare Part D plan. Take your time and explore your Medicare prescription drug availability with your transplant physician's office or transplant facilities caseworker. During a Tony Says Medicare consultation, we are specific about personalizing your Medicare Part D planning because once enrolled, you cannot change until the Medicare annual enrollment period, which is October 15th through December 7th. Tony Says webinar series is available at www.tonysays.com with an additional video regarding how to find the right prescription drug plan. For assistance with enrolling and personalizing your Medicare, contact the Tony Says office at 832-519-8664 or email your Medicare question to info@tonysays.com. Tony King, Medicare author advocate, is giving a $5 discount to the Tony Says readers on the 2022 Medicare Survival Guide, advanced book at www.tonysays.com.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, August 27th. To your good health, Antabuse and hand sanitizer. Dear Dr. Roach, I take Antabuse to help me quit drinking. Do I need to worry about the alcohol and hand sanitizers? Answer. Antabuse is a medication that makes people feel very sick, even if they drink small amounts of alcohol. It is not frequently used anymore, but it is still an effective and time-tested option for medication treatment in people with problem drinking. Hand sanitizers are made from either ethyl alcohol, which is the alcohol in alcoholic beverages, or is from isopropyl or rubbing alcohol. There have been case reports of people developing a reaction to the alcohol from practicing hand hygiene, from aftershave, and even from inhaling fumes after practicing hand hygiene. According to a study during the pandemic, of 42 people on Antabuse who routinely used hand sanitizers, 20% had a reaction to the ethyl alcohol-based sanitizer, and 10% had a reaction to isopropyl-based sanitizer. 7% of people had severe reactions, but the rest were mild and self-limited. There clearly is a risk for developing symptoms after even the smallest amount of alcohol that can be absorbed through the skin or inhaled through fumes. People on Antabuse with a reaction to skin sanitizers should wash their hands rather than use sanitizers.
Girlfriend worries about man's possible offspring. Dear Abby, my boyfriend and I met and started dating 10 years ago. After about 4 years, during a very turbulent and toxic time in our relationship, I found out I was pregnant. When I told him, his response was very cold, and we separated. I terminated the pregnancy, as my life was in shambles and I had no way to even carry a child to term. We reconciled after a year and now have a happy family with our son and another on the way. A woman he had been seeing during that time became pregnant, and her son looks identical to my boyfriend's childhood pictures. I have never talked to him about this, but I find it very painful to think that one day my children and the child of the woman will learn each other through ancestry testing or some other way. Should I speak to him about my suspicion and fear of the pain for our children? Should I consult a therapist to try to cope with this fear before addressing him or try to move past it on my own? Signed, Fearing the Future. Dear Fearing, discuss this with your boyfriend privately at a time when you are both calm and relaxed. If you feel you need the emotional support of a therapist in order to work up the courage to do that, by all means do so. Because of DNA testing, the scenario about which you're concerned may very well happen, so it's wise to be prepared in advance. But please don't worry about causing your children pain. If they aren't made aware of the other child, their reaction is more likely to be one of surprise. Because DNA reunions are becoming more common, it's less of a scandal than it was years ago. Dear Abby, my husband has terrible oral hygiene. He brushes his teeth at night before going to bed, but won't brush them in the morning. It's disgusting. About a year ago, he chipped a front tooth. I have asked him over and over to please get it taken care of. My requests are being ignored. The damage has now become much worse, and it's really noticeable. It doesn't bother him. Nice teeth have always been important to me. When I try to talk to him about it, he walks away. It's to the point that I no longer want to go anywhere with him because it's embarrassing. We have an event to go to soon, and I'm dreading it. This may seem trivial, but I see the dentist on a regular basis, and he hasn't gone in years. It isn't the money. He has no problem spending money on his toys. Please tell me how to handle this. It's causing some major issues between us. Am I asking for too much? Signed, Embarrassed in Wisconsin. Dear Embarrassed, people sometimes let their dental health lapse because they don't see what others do when they speak or smile. Your husband may have a fear of dentists or think you are nagging him for the pleasure of it. If his damaged tooth is ignored much longer, he may wind up losing it. You might be able to get your point across if you film him with your cell phone while he's speaking, laughing, etc., and show him what you and others have been seeing. If that doesn't help, suggest that because of the upsurge in COVID variants, he wear a mask to the event.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.